Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 80. I'm Jamie.
I'm Tim.
I'm Alex.
This is a podcast where we discuss films and topics about films. On even episodes, we discuss topics like we're going to do today, with a minor exception we'll get to in a second. On odd episodes, we talk about films. We each bring one respective item to the table, discuss it around the mic. So today, we promised our dear listener, JD, who had emailed us a couple weeks ago, we would watch Dead Poets Society today because we didn't get a chance to watch it for last week's show. So we're going to jump right into it and talk about Dead Poets Society. First and foremost, follow us on iTunes, subscribe to us there, rate us and review us. Follow us on Twitter, MQHPod, on Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood, and give us an email if you want to suggest your own movie and or topic at notquitepod@gmail.com. So Dead Poets Society was the communal film, thanks to JD.
So we're going full spoilers, right?
Full spoilers.
What I was surprised about is that it ended like super dark. It ended like he lost his job and all that. But then they stood up on the desk and you were like, oh, this is kind of cool. So he doesn't know it's their fault. But it was still like, but he's still fired. I didn't expect it to be like that dark of an ending. I thought it was going to end all happy with, you know, I knew it was going to be sad because, you know, the kid kills himself. I didn't know about that before. But just from the title and the mood of the trailer, you know, it's going to be a sad movie. But I didn't expect it to end that sad.
Carpe diem. This film is what I'm writing my cancer story about. It is about seizing the day and not letting life pass you by. There were some passages in this movie that were read, and I have to look them up because I was like tearing up because it was so powerful. The words were so touching. And I don't like necessarily tear up a lot, but man, like that reminded me of that moment in time where I'm sitting outside for the first time out of a hospital, and I'm over a month, and I'm just breathing the fresh like fall air, and then the you know, I'm picking up a leaf. It reminded me like, oh my God, this life is so fucking precious, and we sometimes we waste it. And in this case, these students are taught to follow a certain regimen and be told what to do and how to live. And this teacher comes in and changes their entire lives. So there was a scene where Robin Williams is asked about the incident outside where they were kind of marching around and you know, his unorthodox teaching methods. And he's like, I thought we were teaching them to be free thinkers. And that's what this film to me is about. It's not just about fitting in a certain place in this world. It's also to cry out into this world. Like, if you, this life is but a song, what's your verse? Like, we each get one verse. Like, that's such a powerful thing to think about. Like, what's our stamp in this world? What, like, these little few years we have in the grand scheme of things. It's a pretty cool thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And something I strive to do with my life eventually. And that's, it's weird. I was around the same age. They're like 14 in this movie, or 16 in this movie, I think. They're not that old.
I think so. They're in high school, right?
Yeah, it's like a preparatory.
They're like 16, 17, yeah.
Yeah. And that was like the same moment where I had that revelation. And I just, God, it just hit me so hard. It was such a great film.
I feel like I had that revelation kind of this year. When I went to Israel in December, all of a sudden it was like, it started out being, I want to try all the foods here because I'm here. And this might be the like one of the only times I'm going to be here. So I was trying everything. I never said no to anything. And mm-hmm. I kind of continued when I came back into like, well, I might only have this chance once, I might as well do it, might as well try it. It's kind of like, I mean, it's kind of like you only live once, I guess, is the more modern saying, but
yeah, but like beyond you only live once, it's like, instead of like a mentality where it's like, well, fuck it, might as well, it's like, this is what you love doing. Yeah. This is what you want to be doing. Like, the deepest parts of you want this. Society's telling you you can't or you shouldn't. Not just society, but like your family sometimes will tell you that you should or shouldn't do certain things. And I feel like the movie was so much about like, fuck that. Like, not like a might as well, but like, this is the only time you're going to be able to do any of these things.
Yeah, definitely.
This is the only impact you have. Like, life is so fucking short.
You only get one shot. Do not make... I can't do
not miss your chance to blow, because opportunity comes once in a lifetime.
You better. There was one in particular, Henry David Thoreau. There was a quote, and it didn't hit me until I thought about it again, but I went into the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to put to rout all that was not life and not, when I had come to die, discovered that I had not lived. It's like, God damn it, man.
Mm. But then also, in addition to that, he was saying, you told us to suck out all the marrow, and then Robin Williams said, yes, but don't choke on the bone.
Choking the bone. That's such a great thing. Love it.
See, that's what I feel like the sucking the marrow out of life is, like, what we're talking about, and then YOLOing is, like, choking on the bone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yes.
Robert Frost.
There's cocaine here, so YOLO. YOLO, might as well do it.
I mean, yeah, that's a little too much.
Maybe like heroin, too much.
So, speaking of heroin... Two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Damn, man. Just seriously.
That's why we're all out here. We're taking the road less traveled.
Mm-hmm.
Because it fucking sucks sometimes.
Oh my God, tell me about it.
Remember when I was younger, poetry and Shakespeare, what are they saying? Why can't they just come out and say what they mean? And then as I've gotten older, it's kind of like, oh, it's so fucking beautiful. Like, I really wanted to go to Shakespeare in the Park this summer. I didn't get to it, but all the Shakespeare themes seem to be speaking to me more as I get older, and especially when they incorporate it in TV and movies, and poetry too, like just the language of it, it seems to be more appealing as you get older.
I appreciate that, like, with poetry, with Shakespeare, with everything, it kind of makes you slow down for a little bit in a world where right now we're just hustling every day. It's so easy to forget to just slow down and think about the words you're choosing to say, the words you're listening to. And so even if you look at what happened with Neil, like when he has that conversation with his parents and his dad's just not listening. You don't have to use your words. Like when he says nothing, when he's like, you know, what do you have to say? And he's like, nothing, I have nothing to say. Of course he has something to say. He's just choosing not to listen because he's like, he's dismissing his child because he knows no better.
But the blame's also on Neil. He told Keating that he was told his dad, he asked his dad and he said it was fine, which is bullshit.
It is bullshit. But like in that situation, in that relationship, I mean, why couldn't he? He couldn't tell his dad because he knew exactly what his dad was going to have him do. Like, and if to get what he wanted in that situation, he just couldn't tell his dad.
Still though.
I also think he kind of knew he was lying. Like at the end, he was like, I don't know if I believe you.
Yeah. But the point being, like, if the dad in that situation, even in just that last conversation, when his son says nothing, really listen into what he's wanting to say or wanting to tell you, because that is a big indicator of what happens next.
Sure.
And because he's so focused on the future and the opportunities that Neil has that he didn't have, he chose to not listen to that or actually take care of his responsibility as a dad in that situation. And so that they feel like everything about this movie was this, it was just, it was to really, yeah, like savor life, slow down, really enjoy where you are right now and enjoy the people you're with because they're not going to be around forever.
Yeah, live in the moment.
Yeah.
But
carpe diem.
The problem is with that, the character Neil did not stand up for himself. He caved. He took the coward way out.
Well, I feel like there's more than that at that point, because with that much pressure on you at that young of an age, when no one, like the only person that really believed in him was Keating. And so like if in that situation, it's not really the way out that he chose was actually the only way out he could possibly conceive of at that moment, because there was no way, it wasn't in his power to say, I'm not going.
And
because his dad wouldn't have let that been an option.
And he expressed how much he loved acting.
To Keating.
Yeah.
Not to his dad.
No, but he told, and then when his dad said, you can't do it anymore, he was like, well,
all right, then I'm going
to
go.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even without his words, he's expressed to his dad how much he loves acting. Without saying, this is what I want, he's already expressed it in the best way he probably knew how to with his dad. So in that situation, for his dad to have done that, that is, I mean, of course, that was his decision in the end, but that was the only way he saw fit. Which I feel like, you know, when a lot of people dismiss that as like the easy way out.
No,
it's not. Think so. It's not something that people are just like, well, might as well commit suicide, especially when you're that young.
Yeah.
Like you don't know yourself and your parents who's supposed to have shaped you that much, like, if that's how they're treating you and that's how they're shaping his narrative to say that you have no voice of your own, you're doing what we want you to do because first, you're so privileged to have this position, so how dare you give that away? Also, you are our child, so you are doing what we tell you to do. Like, if that's the narrative that he's been told his entire life, then the concept of standing up for yourself is not really in the question. So when Keating does help him kind of start to find his own and his parents don't support that, it becomes a territory that is very dangerous.
I don't like the witch hunt they took on Keating. The witch hunt on the professor. It wasn't his fault.
No,
like,
it wasn't.
The parents couldn't accept their fucking responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And for a minute there, when the dad went in and was like, oh, my son, I was like, this is the first time I've seen him like actually love him. And then I was like, maybe he'll see what he did wrong. And it was like, nope.
But it was very artfully done. Directed by Peter Weir, which I didn't know. He went on to direct one of my favorite movies, probably of all time, The Truman Show.
Oh, man.
He's directed a lot of stuff. But and then, I mean, the cast is pretty good. I mean, you got a young Ethan Hawke, Josh Charles, Robert Sean Leonard, who went on to go to House.
Robin Williams.
I think that almost goes without saying, but yeah, Robin Williams was the fucking man.
Weird to see him in a movie with a suicide.
Oh, the way he's talking about death is really... Everything he's done has a hint of death to it. Like, death... Like, honestly,
a
like...
A lot of his movies, yeah.
A lot of his movies have something... Patch Adams... Death of Smoochie, Bicentennial Man. A lot of them have death in there, which is really crazy. I think he kind of went to those because he was so depressed for so many years and had addiction issues.
There was actually one movie where his son kills himself the way that he actually died.
Father's Day? No, that's the other
something...
one. No, it's World's Greatest Dad.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Bob got Goldthwait.
Ugh.
How did he overdose?
No, he
hung himself.
He hung himself, but then it wasn't like the traditional hanging, was it? It was some weird way, right? I don't remember.
I think so.
It was a very similar way of the way that the kid, and it was kind of crazy because that movie was just on TV a couple days after.
Oh, God.
And I was like not prepared for that at all because I'd never seen the movie. And mm-hmm. I was like, I stopped watching. I was like, I can't.
You know, of course, this film's based around the great works of a lot of poets. And poetry is considered an art form, which brings me to the next topic I wanted to bring up, which is Tim's topic, about literal art films, films about art.
So if you haven't seen Loving Vincent or have not heard of Loving Vincent at all, go to YouTube and look up the trailer because it's the first completely oil-painted feature animated film. At first, I was very, like, I wasn't sure how they were going to do it. Because, like, to get an entire oil-painted feature would just take fucking forever. They had over... I forget how many artists they had. They had over 100 artists working on it to get every single frame painted. Because it was all completely painted. Which is just... so impressive. And you can see how they kind of animated it. They like kept a lot of the background, and when the characters are moving, they were able to kind of like, you can see that they kind of wiped some of the characters away so that they can animate them. But it was just such a beautiful film. Like it was an oil painted film. Like you look at the screen and you're like, this is, you see the strokes, like it's just all there. And I just have not seen anything like it. So visually, absolutely spectacular. And at the end, in the credits, all the characters were drawn from Vincent van Gogh's paintings of those people. So it was the closest to a real depiction of those characters, not just like, you know, an actor playing them, but like how they actually looked like. And so it was so weird because it was as if we were watching them kind of through Vincent's eyes. There were a color for present, and then when it was back in Vincent van Gogh's time, it went to black and white. So this movie takes place after Vincent's death. And so this guy needs to deliver a letter to Vincent's closest kin or next of kin. And he knew Vincent and his dad was good friends with him. And so he was going to kind of do his dad a favor, essentially. And then he kind of stayed in the town asking people about who he was because... some people started to say he probably didn't kill himself and someone actually killed him. So it was kind of like it became a little bit of an investigation. And so it was fascinating. People were just going back and forth between what people's stories of Vincent and then also this guy figuring out who he was. So
I didn't know it was narratively structured. I thought it was just about the art.
No, it was it's about Vincent Van Gogh's so again, it was just post him, pretty much people's impressions of him, because I mean, he didn't, if you don't know this, his work didn't get recognized at all during his lifetime.
Yeah.
He was acclaimed one of the like leaders of the modern art movement after he died.
Right.
And he thought he was crazy, and people thought he was, everyone kept saying he's a very dark man. He was very troubled. He cut his ear off and gave it to a hooker. Like,
yeah.
He was a disturbed man, but he was not recognized in his lifetime, which is so sad.
Yeah.
Is there a biopic about him?
No, I don't think. This is kind of like the closest it has come to that. Although there was a Doctor Who episode about it, about Vincent, and that was a beautiful episode. The trailer's very vague. And it's mostly kind of a depiction of like how the art looks like. It is very different than typical animation because it's oil painted. And like when people are far off in the distance, you don't get the full detail because it's the nature of the art. But after a little while, like, man, like the animation itself, like the way that they capture people's emotions and facial expressions, I was just so blown away by. It was beautiful. And it was just so sad. Like his life is so sad.
I'm trying to picture, I haven't seen the trailer yet, so it's visually, is it similar to like that film A Scanner Darkly, where it's rotoscoped over actual filming, or is it just literally animation, like not a single person?
They said from the beginning that it's completely oil painted, but if you look at the black and white bits, it kind of looks like they could have had some of that, because the color bits you can totally tell is like completely oil painted, and like every single frame looks... And you can see, like, when you're watching it, when the character moves, you see there's a blur around them because you can they erased and painted over it.
Okay.
So you can see that blur motion going. So, like, you can tell that it wasn't messed with in post. It doesn't look completely polished, which is actually something that I thought was beautiful about it. But when you get to the black and white bits, it looked way too good. So I'm not sure if it was just because it was black and white and it's easier to make that look more polished in black and white, or if it was there was some live action filming for them to get the movements for sure, because later they show the actors, Chris O'Dowd is in it, he's one of the voices.
Okay.
And they show him in his costume and all that stuff, so there was some live filming. I don't know if any of that actually made an appearance in the movie itself.
Right.
Yeah, like it was such so fast, like from the beginning I was like, how did they do this? Like, I really don't know how you can do a cell by cell, like frame by frame painted movie, like, because it's like either you're doing every single painting or frame exactly the same, or you're doing something else with it. And so the way that they got around it is, as long as the background wasn't moving, the background stayed the same, just the characters moved around it, and so they were able to kind of erase that part. And then yeah, so it was really fascinating.
What studio did it?
I don't know. It's an independent.
Sweet. So we'll probably get some screeners or something.
Oh, I'm hoping.
When you were talking, they might have... I could totally see them filming something and then referencing that when they were painting.
Oh, no, that's exactly what they did. Okay. For sure. Okay. But I don't know if they were able to use any CGI to, like, fuse that, especially for the black and white bits.
Yeah.
Because it looked way too... Like, it didn't look like oil painting at that point. If it was, I'm like, y'all are fucking amazing.
They probably just painted over each frame.
Yeah, and that's why, like, with the movement of it, they were able to do... But it was, yeah, still, it was all still completely painted. Sure. Like, you can see some of the... one of the characters, she had, like, a polka dot dress on. So you can see the dots that are, like, when she's moving, you can see some of the dots move with her, but then some of them are just there still. So, like, you know, they're not going to erase and create more dots if they don't have to.
Right.
It was a trip. It was emotional. And it was just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The world's first fully painted feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Oscars.
Oh, if this doesn't win the animated Oscar, it would be very sad.
Well, sorry, Tim. Cars 3. So, the reason I was excited about this topic is because I had... heard about this film that was very similar, not necessarily, I thought yours was a little different, but this film is called The 1 Second Film. It is literally a second long, and it's completely 100% backed by people, and there's a lot of celebrities in that are backing it, but it's also anybody can be a producer on the film. And I wanted to help out because it was an interesting concept. It was 24 seconds, made out of 12 large collaborative paintings. So each one is this massive painting that is two frames long.
Hey, this is Jamie here. I wanted to give you a little audio version of what that would sound like if you heard 1 second of 12 songs at 2 frames each. So here it is. Did you pick out your favorite song? Probably not. Let me play it again for you. There you go. Imagine that in a blink of an eye.
And then they have the hour of credits listing everyone who participated, but also during the credits they have a feature-length making of documentary that'll play alongside of it. So it's a really interesting concept, and so you'll obviously get to see the frames a little better because that would go by in a blink of an eye. But it's a really cool like collaborative art project that's been going on since I first heard about it in 2005 or 6. Still going on, has not yet been released.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a really interesting, like I'll link to the trailer for Loving Vincent and to this in the show notes, but it so far has over 56,000 crew members from 158 countries. So yeah, you can get, like, be associate producer for under $10, producer for 10.
That's crazy.
That all sounds super cool.
So
I wish I had a film to throw out, but I think they're both so unique that there's really no films like them, you know?
Right. And the real reason why, very vain, the real reason why I helped promote this film, or rather to help
back it,
initially back it. Yeah, this is because this is before Kickstarter. This is before that online movement really got into place. But, you know, I backed it on their website. They were offering IMDb credit. And I'm like, at the time, I never had a credit. Like, I want to have a credit. So I had a producer credit, and then it had it for a while, and then it kind of went away. And I was like, oh, no, I lost that credit. Yeah, I put this like picture of myself. I'll show you my link in the show notes. It's funny as hell. But it was a picture I'd put up that was like, for $10, you could add your own pictures in the back then. And this picture was bad. I'm laying near like a mattress on the floor with my like Fort Kent hoodie. And I'm looking at the camera like almost unintentionally seductively. Really weird. So then I was like, well, that's fine. My credit's gone. My name's gone from IMDb. When I get more credits, I'll put a better picture. Nope. As soon as I got a new credit, that picture was still there. It just didn't count as that 1 second film credit.
But, oh my gosh.
So it's a very long transition into IMDb credits. That's the topic. How long has it been since you've been using IMDb.com?
Since I've been using it?
Yeah.
Like,
since like the beginning of like time.
High school, junior high.
I forget exactly when I found it, but I definitely found it quite early on. What I was looking up. There was like a short period of time when I was in middle school where I was putting up movie reviews on Zynga.
Oh my God.
I know, right? And that's when I started using IMDb's because I wanted to make sure I got all the names right and what they've done before and all that stuff. But yeah, that's when I've been using IMDb. So like back in middle school, yeah, I guess.
And in high school, I used to go on the, you know, you like search somebody and then at least something else, like these long IMDb, like you're just lost in the void, and then you find some random film that you never heard of that you want to see.
So I first used it when I wanted to look up some movie. I don't remember what the movie was, but I wanted to see who the actor was. Because like, oh, I recognize him from something else. So I searched that person or that movie, and it brought it up. And so the site's been going on since 1990. October 17th, oh my God, it's tomorrow, as of this recording. Tomorrow, it'll be 27 years ago. That's crazy.
27 years ago? That's older than I am.
Older than both of you. I think I first used it in like 96 or 97, when there was like a movie I wanted to look up. When we got our computer at my house, I used it all the time. And I was always fascinated by it. Like, one day I'm going to have credits.
Was it like dial-up?
Oh, God, yeah. Took forever to load just like document. It was really old. You have to look. Maybe it's on the, what's that called? The film vault or the internet time capsule. Maybe I'll link to it. I'll try to find it. So yeah, I started using it again and got, the cool thing is when you use without a box for any short film submissions, like they give you an automatic IMDb credit. And yeah, I was kind of fascinated with adding more credits to my name. And I had a really funny short that was like a little too long, but it was a fucking blast. It was an accidental shoot. Long story short, I had this idea and script written for this short film for school, and stuff started falling apart. One guy didn't show up, and then we couldn't use this location for too long. We realized how long it would take to shoot all of this. We only had 2 days in the weekend, and my jib didn't work. What the fuck is going on? So we just kind of went with it and pretended we were making a film and had all the people play themselves, heightened versions of themselves, and it was fucking a blast. And all of it's improv, and it just became this great thing. I'll link to that too. But yeah, it's a really fun film, and that started like a whole comedy troupe, Gutter Snipes, after that. But what was your first credit?
My first credit?
Yeah.
My first credit on IMDb, let's check. It's probably my first short that I did. This is a funny story, actually. So it's a short film called Anxiety.
Oh.
And it was, I was obsessed with Jekyll, the BBC TV series that, who does Doctor Who and Sherlock? Shit.
Stephen Moffat.
Yeah. He wrote that. Jekyll. It was like only a couple episodes, and it was amazing, and I was obsessed with it. And so I'm like, I kind of want to do a spin on Jekyll and Hyde. And mm-hmm. So it was about two girls, they're roommates, and one of the girls kind of has a whole Jekyll and Hyde thing happening. And it was a fun little six minute short. And we played with white contact lenses. And this was in school. This was my first short in college. And I went to a small Christian liberal arts college, so no one had really dabbled in the horror. And so when I had that, and like when she opened her eyes and there was like white people were like, oh my God, this is so scary. It was the best feeling ever. But that we like part of our class requirement was to submit it to a festival without a box.
Yeah.
And so we submitted to one that I just saw a time, like whichever was coming next and which one was local or close by. And so I went to school in Michigan, and there was a festival in Indiana, and the submission was $25. And I'm like, why not? So I submitted to it, and then we got technically accepted into the festival. So that was our that was my first IMDb credit. However, what I didn't realize was that festival was the Indiana the Heartland Festival.
Okay.
Which is like all for Hallmark Channel, very sweet, very loving, very heartwarming movies, and I just submitted a horror movie to that, and we got in.
Wow!
So that was funny. We didn't get to an official selection, but we were definitely accepted to the festival to be like considered. And I was like, "This is ridiculous," kind of funny, but that's my first IMDb credit.
And mine was my senior thesis in college. One of the guys who helped out on the movie made an IMDb page and put us all in there.
Viral?
Yeah.
Nice.
And he put me as Alex Howard, which I want to be Alexander, so I need to go in and change that.
Oh, damn.
But and I still need to give myself credit for the documentary, too. I haven't. I'm the assistant, so I'm in charge of doing that, and I haven't done it yet for me.
It's an easy fix. It used to be a lot harder. I tried. Okay, so for that worst film ever made, which was my first credit, and then after we did a short called Love Off Key, my friend John, last name Gaia, we're different people, clearly. But they eventually merged our two names.
Oh, no.
Because we worked different roles, but on the same projects together. And it became this frustrating thing. So now sometimes I'm credited as John Gaia.
Wait, he has the same last name as you?
Yeah.
But he's not related?
That's funny. No,
it's pretty common, actually, up there. So what was funny about it, yeah, so like I'm the writer of the short, Love Off Key, and the director and producer, and he was assisted in casting, and he was associate producer, and he was starring in it, and then now it's all under me. And there was like this weird self credit that was on like the American Experience documentary. I think it was Ken Burns, and there was an episode called Kinsey. Apparently, there was a John Guy out there, and that he got that as well. So now it's on my name. And I tried many times splitting it up. I still have tried recently, and it just doesn't let me do to get rid of AKA. We eventually got his name back on, but I'm still also known as John, which I've never ever called myself John.
That's just so frustrating.
It gets it's such a pain in the ass. And like there are people who do this for a living, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. This also then gets me to like a lot of my other credits that I had. Like I was just telling Jamie, I have two separate pages because I have one that's my stage name or screen name for when I do acting projects, and then I have another one that's all my behind the scenes stuff. And there were times when I was on set as a crew member. And in the deal memo, in all of my paperwork, I would put my Tim J. Lim, which is the thing that I have for my behind-the-scenes stuff. But then my Facebook says Tim Jim Lim. So they just, when they put the credits in, they just put Tim Jim Lim, and so it gets credited to my acting page. And, like, I have to go through and, like, claim that thing. It's just a weird thing. People don't quite realize that, like, these small changes do make a difference. And it's a pain in the ass. Like, once it's up on the page, like, up on IMDb, it's a hard thing to change.
Do you need IMDb Pro or no?
Not necessarily.
To claim a thing, you don't... Yeah, I don't think you can technically... You do need to... whoever wants to make the change does need to have IMDb Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be necessarily you. Like, I can... I forget exactly who does that, but then they can go in and then, like... say this is a change that needs to happen.
I don't know. I mean, back then it was a little harder, and yeah, it's gotten easier now. I can go in and say, oh, like our friend and former guest Kevin Masterson, he had said, oh, I didn't get credited for this short, so I just fixed it for him, and it worked because I had Pro, I guess. But yeah, that's one of the perks of having Pro. You can do that a little more easily.
How much is it?
$120 a year, I think, if you go as a discount.
Really?
But it's worth it. Yeah. Because you get a lot of actual connections and contacts, and you get to see more pre-pro what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I used it for one of my old assistant jobs because she didn't have all the contacts, and it got a lot of them. Like, even if it's just their office, I got to the right person at least.
Yeah,
you can find all their reps, like, numbers, the person that you contact. Funny thing, though, if you log on to Pro and look at mine and Tim J. Lim, I'm claimed by this. There's a Canadian representative company that says that they're my manager.
What?
And they're like a dead company, and I just think it's funny because it says that I'm repped by them, but I'm not.
You could say that you're repped and then have them call your manager, and it could be me.
That could totally work. But
we just spoiled it.
That company that is dead, one of the founders, I think his name is Tim Lim, which is why people. I don't know why it's like automatically.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what is going on there, but apparently I'm represented by this company in Canada.
Can you talk about the split accounts? Is that something you want to discuss on podcast?
I can. Yeah, no, like, I have my two separate IMDb accounts because it's kind of a stigma here. Like, unless you're well-established, like, unless you're an actor that has a name, you don't really want to be an actor that directs or a director that acts, because that's kind of... People kind of frown on that because a lot of times they can only do one or the other and they think they can do both. And so for me, I just kind of separate the two. And so on my business card, when I hand that out, it's the Tim J. Lim.
Right.
But on my headshot and on my actor's stuff, that's all Tim Jim Lim. So I keep it intentionally split. And it's something that I personally like doing. And people have said that's actually a good idea when I'm starting out. So if I'm actually in a meeting with anybody as a director, I don't like it's not good to have, like, if you go on my IMDb page and you see me as an actor doing a lot of acting. That's what I've been told. But then there's lots of people who disagree.
That's really strange because I feel like a lot of actors make good directors because they can give good direction.
It's completely separate set of skills.
I guess.
Yeah, because actors who try to direct each other, a lot of them don't know how. Because the big difference between the acting and directing portion is that when you're acting, you're the one being watched, and the director, you're the one watching, and you can't mix the two. As soon as you start mixing the two. So if you're an actor and you start watching yourself, that's when you can tell that someone's acting. And so that's why people have a hard time balancing both. When you watch, if you saw, I forget what movie it was. It was a movie with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie together that she directed.
Oh.
That something with the sea.
Cambodia.
No.
Just kidding.
That's where they got their kid.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. But anyways, like, that movie, you can see she directed that one, and she was in it. And I think that was the first one that she had acted and directed in. It was very obvious that she was watching herself. Like, you could tell, like, she's a great actress, but in this one, she struggled a lot. And it's because you can't really – it's hard to balance the two. So when someone can, it's impressive as fuck. So, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt does it really well. But it's also because he directs a lot outside of acting. And so he does both. Yeah, Hit Record is his production company. Anyone can join. So if you want to do it, just go to hitrecord.com or .org, one or the other. And you can start making your own stuff and just post it. His thing is, like, there's no excuse for you not to make something every day.
So are we linking to all of our first films in the show notes?
I'll link to the credits themselves.
Should I say what mine's about. So my first credit viral is about, it's like, what if a company made all of the YouTube hit viral videos? It was one company and they were all like fake. So it wasn't an accident of the cat dancing or what, you know, whatever's the big thing that's like, oh, I can't believe this happened. Well, it didn't actually happen. There's one company that made all these videos. So the company's called Viral. And so basically the short is about, or it's kind of a pilot. We're supposed to make a pilot. It's like 10 or 15 minutes. And it's about, they're trying to come up with their next hit. And I'm the editor of it. So that was really fun. And we got the Double Rainbow guy do a cameo. So that was really cool. He's the, he used to babysit my co-editor. So we got him to Skype in and do a little cameo.
That's hilarious.
So speaking of IMDb credits, we're going to talk about some people that may have had a lot of credits over the years, but are now coming under fire because of, you guessed it, sexual harassment. So, Alex, this is your topic, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of lead us into this.
So this week, I guess it was last week. A
couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Started coming out that Harvey Weinstein has been sexually harassing and abusing women. And so it was a New York Times investigation, and they were, I guess they've been investigating for a while, and then they published the article, and a whole bunch of other women came out when the article came out. I don't know exactly how many women. It was a lot, though. And
13 women.
13 women. Thank you, Tim. And, I mean, one of them, what is her name? One of them works at Fox 11 where I interned, and I met her a few times. And she's super nice. But with her story, I guess she was in a hotel room, and Harvey Weinstein, like, masturbated in front of her or something. And Lauren Savon, that's her name. She's a reporter at Fox. And it's just, it's weird because it's not surprising to me. It's like, if you were like, oh, there's a higher up Hollywood exec who does this, I'd be like, Harvey Weinstein. I feel like he was just in that time where that was happening, which is not an excuse, which is the excuse he gave. He said he was, you know, brought up in that time and it was acceptable, and he never said he didn't do it. So he is now in Europe for sex addiction. And the company, his brother is suing him, and they're trying to change the name of the company because now it's
tainted.
Now it's tainted. And there were a bunch of other chairmen of the company that got let go. There was a woman that got let go from the company. So it's weird because this company is so, they're always, you know, up there for the Oscars. They're always such a presence in Hollywood. And now they have to totally change their name. So besides that, there are other Hollywood execs that have not been revealed yet. But for example, Terry Crews tweeted out and said that he was on a red carpet one time and a higher up Hollywood exec came up and groped him, and he almost punched him, but him and his wife were like, the headlines tomorrow are going to say Terry Crews punched Hollywood exec, not Hollywood exec groped Terry Crews. And then, you know, so he didn't do it. But he said, if anyone has been abused or anything, come forward and we can all work together and take these guys out of power.
Yeah.
And there was another tweet from somebody else I saw that didn't name anybody, but it's like, come forward so we can get this out of Hollywood. So this is like a serious problem that we need to deal with, I feel like. I mean, as an actor, Tim, I mean, a lot of these people are actresses, like.
Yeah, and I mean, it also, like, it's, you guys know the whole Me Too movement going on Facebook right now?
No, what is that?
It's just, you know, if you've been sexually abused or harassed as a woman, you know, all you have to say is Me Too on your status, and you'll see the, it'll be staggering to see how many of your friends on your own Facebook page. Oh my God,
that's what it was.
That's what Me Too's all about, and so I'm actually seeing so many people saying Me Too, and I'm like, I had no idea, because these are things you don't really talk about. Like, people who are sexually abused tend to feel shame or guilt on themselves, which is what that does to a psyche of someone who is sexually abused. But then a lot of my male friends have also been stepping up and saying, you know, Me Too. Like, it works to men as well. Like the statistic, the official statistic, which is generously low, apparently, is that 1 in 6 men was sexually abused as a child. And that's apparently a generous low number.
Hmm.
And I know plenty of people with some other male Hollywood execs who have told actors to say, if you like, if you sleep with me, I will give you an audition for this role. And, like, it sounds like such a, like, oh, that really doesn't happen. No, it happens. It happens. And if you say no, they're like, you're no longer allowed to audition for me or this company ever.
Oh, yeah. And it's, and if they were to come out and say that this happened, it'd be like, well, who are you going to believe? Like, this up, not even up and coming yet actress or this high up Hollywood exec.
Yeah. Like, and the stories that you hear, it's crazy. And, like, the sad thing is that, like, I've also had friends who are, like, not deemed attractive by those execs. And so at parties, these execs get drunk and start talking to them and spilling beans about all these things. And they're just really, really sad people, which is, it's just, it's such a mess. It's just such a mess to hear all those stuff. But, like, it's just.
So since then, a lot of people have come forward, both male and female. Rob Schneider, I just saw, said he was sexually harassed by a director.
Wow.
And then, of course, Seth MacFarlane had called him out like years ago, Harvey Weinstein in particular, and because he, I think he, one of his girlfriends at the time was being harassed, or one of his friends, rather. And then also, Corey Feldman came out again, because he'd been saying for years that Hollywood executives used to, it was pedophilia everywhere.
That's abundant. Who it was. That's who I was thinking.
Yeah, and it was like him and Corey Haim were sexually abused often. And they were, when they were teens, and you know, in the 80s, and that's when they went to drugs, and that's and right. Corey died. Eventually, Haim died.
That was the thing I tagged you in, right?
I don't
know. Facebook.
It's not even the higher levels of Hollywood. It's not just there because no. Recently the creator and lead of Screen Junkies, Andy Signor, got accused as well after Harvey broke out. Everybody else was brave enough to talk about it, and he had like dozens of counts on him over the years, like. Messaging them, and he has a wife and a kid, and it's really just sad. Everybody else from the company's distancing them, but that's going to hurt the company.
Oh yeah,
all these employees, you know.
I think that, I mean, obviously this is good that this is all coming out, but I think this is will be the beginning of the change in Hollywood. You know, no more of this. Oh, you got to do this for me if you want to get famous, or the, you know, the not just sexual abuse, but like the. Though working for free,
it's still gonna be there. Like, all that's still going to be there for sure. Like, it's not ever gonna just be non-existent.
Yeah,
right.
But it'll definitely be a lot harder for people to get away with that. And I think it might shift into a less obvious way of manipulation. Mm-hmm. It'll still be there, but then I think what's amazing about this is now people are not afraid to speak up about it, and It is.
Hopefully, it stays that way, because I feel like it'll stay for like a month or two. It'll be like,
but that's kind of the thing. Like right now, it's such a hot topic,
yeah.
So people aren't gonna even try anything for a little bit. But then eventually, it'll go back to it.
Yeah, it's like with Bill Cosby. Like people were coming out, and then it like went back to normal, and then now it's back to people.
Yeah, and that's always the case. That's always the case. I think that's what's gonna be good. Is that it's going to be a lot more of an accountability for the Hollywood executives. My hope is that that really does start shedding light on other things about the Hollywood executives, just because I feel like
what?
No, just I feel like work ethic and a reevaluation of what's better for Hollywood. Like, these executives have done a lot in their day, but then it's been also very harmful, certain things that they've done. So, like, I'm hoping that they do start doing a little bit more of an investigation on them in general, making way for some new people, like people who are not afraid to do things the right way, not afraid to old people who did things a certain way when they were younger.
Yeah.
And it's like growing up in the, oh, that was just normal back then as an excuse.
Yeah.
Like, fuck no.
No.
But.
And also, I think it's crazy that the late night hosts on Monday night, like, didn't take any shots. Like, I feel like everyone was still kind of scared at that point to make jokes about it because he is so powerful. And it was like, no, like, this is a thing we should be talking about now.
It's still not that easy, though, because if they're on a show and they're tied with people who have a say in saying what they can and cannot say, that gets dicey.
Yeah, it does.
And,
like, they called out SNL for not doing it right off the bat. They did it as people thought they
would. Yeah, and I think that's why it's hard, because it's not as easy as, because it's so messy at that point, because we're all part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they're all part of it. Like, it's just, not part of the act, but then like they're a part of this big mess. And when it comes to it being the state that it's in right now, I feel like it would be difficult for them to know what to do with.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously something you want to be careful when you joke about, but it's topical, and they joke about topical topics.
Yeah.
And it's like, you gotta take a shot.
Yeah. You know? I'm hoping like then maybe in the coming weeks, because I feel like it, when you start insulting or not insulting, calling people out on, like, make it serious and it deals with something so personal for a lot of these women, like also joking.
No.
And so like, how do you properly proceed from there?
Yeah.
So I think that's another consideration, figuring out how to actually make this and use this opportunity.
There are ways to talk about it being serious too. Like Jimmy Kimmel is pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel's the only one I actually saw who said anything about it.
And that's awesome. But
Stephen Colbert did, too.
He did?
Yeah. Mostly about Harvey, but yeah.
It's so sad because Weinstein was such a name that I loved so much. And I still love the company, I guess, but
whenever
not...
I was around SAG or like any agencies or anything, I was like, the biggest guy I could run into right now is Harvey Weinstein.
And I, even at Sundance when I was working there, I got to, he wasn't there, but he sent his assistant to scan, like to scan his badge to say that he was at a screening. And I saw his badge and I'm like, I'm holding on to Harvey Weinstein's badge right now. This is pretty cool.
Wow.
I didn't let him in, not him, but then I didn't let his assistant in because, or with that, he had to still pull out his own credential. But I'm like, it's Harvey Weinstein, you know, like it was a cool, it's a great name, you know? Yeah. And then, When that all broke out, it did make me really sad.
But at the same time, like, were you surprised? I kind of wasn't surprised.
Not
at all.
I was not surprised at all.
Yeah.
Okay. So my communal movie this week, I wanted to do the, what's it called? The Killing of the Sacred Deer from the director of The Lobster, but I probably won't have time to go to the movies this weekend. So I'm going to make my communal movie Enemy, directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
And we've been talking about his films for a while, and that's one that we haven't seen and we've been wanting to check out. So we'll talk about it next week.
And if you want to know how to pronounce Denis' name, I put the video up on YouTube for last week's show notes. Denis Villeneuve. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Next week, I really wanted to go into, because it's the last week before Halloween, I wanted to go into some like Halloween film territory. So I'm not sure what my film will be in, but I'm going to bring a film to the table that's a Halloween and or horror film related. I'm doing my three final 52 pickups for Halloween related next week. I was going to do one, but I haven't got a chance to watch one this week. So we'll just quickly talk about all three of them. Spoiler alert, the first one out of the three is The Frighteners. So if you want to watch ahead with us, do it. I'm really excited to watch that again. I love that film so much. And, but yeah, so follow along on guyonawire.com. That's where all 80 episodes are backlogged. You can listen to every single episode we've ever put out. My cancer story is there as well, where I mentioned earlier where I'm writing about my battle and why it's important to me to rewire how you look at life and just enjoy it and take advantage, take charge.
Carpe diem, right?
Carpe diem. Don't take advantage like Harvey Weinstein. Take advantage more like carpe diem. Of course, the show's on Twitter and Facebook and QH Pod and Not Quite Hollywood, respectively. Email us, suggest a movie or topic at notquitepod@gmail.com.
And Wing Get Out.
Which is great because it's a horror film that is completely unique.
We're doing that all October. So somebody email us. As long as it's within October, you'll win it. Digital copy.
Of all of you that respond, if any, you know, we'll pick one out.
we'll pick it out of a hat.
Right, sure. A literal Dodgers hat.
Yes.
Dodgers are going to win the World Series this year, I've heard.
We can't say that. We can't jinx
it.
No.
The Red Sox will win. Just kidding.
Red Sox, yay.
Did you get Mainers? Don't follow a shitty team. I'm just kidding. I don't care about baseball. Full disclosure. And so I'm on also Guy on the Wire on Twitter and Instagram. Where can we find you, fine gentlemen?
You can find me on Instagram at TimJimLimArtist, Twitter at TimJLim.
This is why IMDb was confused.
This is why, yes, IMDb was very confused.
You can find me on Instagram, me and my blazer. You can find my movie reviews, Doggone Movie Reviews, and email us and win the movie.
Do it.
And what's the email just one last time?
NotQuitePod@gmail.com.
There you go. There you have it.
Follow along with us. Watch The Frighteners if you want. Watch your communal film, Enemy. And we're going to have a great episode. We have Kevin Masterson rejoining us next week. Exciting.
Yay.
So it should be a fun time.
Oh, we should tell him to watch Enemy also.
Yeah, we'll try
him over to watch it with us.
Yeah.
Kevin's the guy that with a deep voice, right? Have I met Kevin?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Kevin, we have not met.
You know what we should talk Kevin? About? Kevin. We need to talk about Kevin when Kevin is on.
Oh, that'd be interesting if that's a horror-related film.
That'd be fun.
It's definitely disturbing. But until next time, I am Jamie.
I am Tim.
I'm Alex.
Bye. Nice little flourish at the end there.